Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Unconditionally Worthy podcast. I'm actually recording this in the summer, even though you're listening in probably the late fall, but it's the beginning of August, and we're having a pretty low-key summer here in the Gooden Stanford household. Amani is walking, and she's starting to talk. Her latest favorite word is wow, so we're hearing a lot of wow, wow, which is like so cute. It is the most adorable thing to hear a 14-month-old be like, wow, wow. So I'm, you know, getting a lot of joy from hearing her talk and try out words and just be so expressive. This stage is really, really fun. So I hope that you are doing well, and I'm excited to share this episode with you. So today I have Jennifer Standish on the episode, and we're really talking about limiting beliefs, how they keep us stuck in our lives, how to overcome and get out of those limiting beliefs. She shares a little bit about her own story and some examples, and we kind of talk through, you know, why it's important to recognize what your limiting beliefs are, how to kind of do a self-assessment of that, and how to start to shift them. So it's going to be a really helpful episode. I hope you enjoy it. So let's get into it. Welcome to the Unconditionally Worthy podcast. In this podcast, I will guide you on your journey to connect with the true source of your self-worth. Each week, we'll discuss barriers to unconditional self-worth, the connection between self-worth and relationships, self-worth practices you can apply to your life, and how to use self-worth as a foundation for living courageously. I'm your host, Dr. Adia Gooden, a licensed clinical psychologist, dance enthusiast, and a dark chocolate lover who believes deeply that you are worthy unconditionally. I'm excited to have Jennifer Standish as my guest on today's podcast. Jennifer is an author and personal transformation expert. She is an author of Permission Granted, Live Your Life Full of Joy and Peace, a book in which she shares 91 self-limiting beliefs that, as a result of being raised by a narcissistic mother and an enabling father, she learned growing up and realized as an adult that she needed to change to be happy. She is also the founder and president of Give Yourself Permission, which helps women create new rules for their lives so they can overcome limiting attitudes and prevent them from achieving career success and finding happiness. I'm so excited to have you here on the podcast, Jennifer. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. So I'd love to start our conversation where I start all of the conversations I have with guests, which is by asking you to share a bit about your own self-worth journey.
Well, it was hard fought. Four and one. I, as you said, I was raised by a narcissist and an enabler, and I was her number one enemy. And so my older and younger sister got it much easier than I did. But what ended up happening was I emerged from college a shell of a human being where I had no sense of awareness. I didn't know what I liked, what I didn't like, what I was good at. I was just this shell that was incredibly codependent and mirrored everybody in the room. So whatever you needed me to be, I was. And I got through college and I got through a couple years into my career. And then I reached a point where I was kind of expected to have opinions at work, and I had none. Because I just repeated what I heard. I just mirrored everybody. And so I ended up having a nervous breakdown and was out of the workforce for about 3 years. And I went into therapy and I just said that I know two things about myself. I'm blonde and I like pizza. And that's it. That's all I got. That's all I got. And so that was the start of this constant exploration and lots of setbacks, because I had to create this foundation in order to build you know, an amazing life on top of it, but I had no foundation. And that takes, for me, it took close to 20 years to figure out who I was, what I liked, what I stood for. I mean, I had no moral code. I had nothing. I just was a shell. And so it really kind of took a long time and lots of mistakes. Like I said, it was hard won because it was mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake. And then there were some significant breakups and then a significant divorce that really was transformative for me. And I have to think that when I got divorced in my early 40s, I crumbled. But as I was putting myself back together again, I put myself back together again in a way where I tell people it's like I had no scar tissue. Where before all my healing involved lots of scars and lots of like, you know, tough sort of moments, but I kind of emerged a completely different human being. And that's when I feel like I've arrived. I got this. I know who I am. I know what I want. I know what I like. I can make decisions that are in alignment with myself, but it took a lot of work and I try to help my clients shorten that time frame. Like I don't want it to take 20 years for everyone. Right. So if I can help them arrive at that place where they're confident in their skin and they know their core values and they're operating in alignment and they feel joy and peace. If we can do that in a much shorter period of time, God bless.
Yeah. Will you talk a little bit more about what it was about your divorce, what you experienced, what insights you gained during that time that helped you to transform in such a, you know, radical way?
Yeah. So my marriage ended in 5 minutes. It was the greatest love affair. And what happened was he just decided that he wanted children and that he, you know, wanted to move home. He came from the Middle East and he wanted to move home and have a traditional marriage. But it was basically like the entire foundation of our marriage changed in one conversation. And it was, I think you just want to move home and have a traditional marriage and be with your family and have kids. And he kind of looked at me and was like, yeah. So I was like, all right, we're getting a divorce. And we separated with so much love but what it did was it pulled the carpet out from underneath me. And I just couldn't wrap my head around the idea that somebody could change that much. Like, how did you not know about this? We discussed this at great lengths. There were assurances that we were going to live in the United States. It was going to be a modern marriage. There weren't going to be children in large part because, you know, he didn't want children. And then all of a sudden there was this massive flip. And so I felt like I was in a haze for about a year because because we loved each other and we had a good marriage and we were really happy. And so it was just like, what, how did this happen? And so for about a year, I was in this fog. And I would be in the grocery store and I would just burst into tears and just be like, how can this happen? How did this happen? And then I, just through lots of soul searching, I really came to the understanding that people are allowed to change. And he changed and he had every right to change. People change all the time. And I looked back at all of my relationships and I stayed in relationships that should have ended much sooner. I had this big thing about commitment and loyalty and you work things out. But those weren't in my best interests. Very often they weren't relationships that were worth salvaging, but I just thought somewhere along the line, I was going to get an award for being committed, that I was going to get points where in fact there are no points. And I should have done what my husband did, which was very quickly when he realized he said something and pulled out. And I said, well, God bless him for doing that because it saved me years. And I also realized that I can now change my mind, that when I enter into a relationship or enter into something, a job or whatever it is, it's some sort of engagement, if it no longer works for me, I am allowed to backpedal. You're allowed to do that. And so I learned how to be more self-sufficient and realize that, you know, as somebody said, you know, people, you really just borrow the people in your life. You know, there's no guarantee that you're going to have them forever. And nothing is forever. And so take care of yourself. I made some pretty bad decisions about my future, you know, financially and stuff, being married. And so it was like, no, recognize that everything is on loan. And be prepared for changes, and people as well as me may decide this is no longer right for me, and I'm allowed to change my mind. And I think that empowered me in such a way that I now approach life so much differently. And really, I just decided to spend way more time on fostering relationships with my girlfriends and let romantic relationships kind of come in and out, you know, because they end and they begin and they end and they begin. But those girlfriends, I made them the focus of my life.
And so
lots of little decisions just have become so much easier because I wasn't committing to them forever.
Yeah, I love that. And I love kind of what you're saying about sort of prioritizing friendships. I feel like there has been more of a emphasis on that, at least in the social media world, right? Like talking about friends as soulmates and these things, because I do think we often, you know, we're in a society that fantasizes about romantic relationships and prioritizes them above all else. And really often it is your friends who are there with you through thick and thin, through decades, right? And those friendships deserve to be nurtured. And I also appreciate what you're saying about giving yourself permission to change your mind, right? Like that you don't have to sort of stay with the same decision, especially because whenever we're making a decision, we don't know everything, right? Like it's just, we know as much, hopefully as much as possible in that moment, but then you're going to learn something else, right? Your experience is going to teach you something else. You're going to get more information. And so having the ability to change your mind and hopefully to do it with grace and thoughtfulness and all of those things, right? But being able to do that gives you this freedom. And I think it also helps because so often people are agonizing over making the right decision, right? Because it's so weighty and so heavy to make the right decision versus what's the best decision for me right now, given the knowledge and information that I have. And then knowing as the situation evolves, as you evolve, you can make a new decision.
Right. Absolutely. And you can make decisions that are based on what's best for you. And that changes what's best for you. And so, you know, and I can, and now I'm more comfortable making temporary decisions, you know, because I don't put as much weight on these decisions anymore. It's like, so I'm thinking of moving to North Carolina and I found an apartment complex I want to be in for that next home. It's not the home. It's not my forever home, but it's fine for that next one. And then we'll see where we come out. Right. So yeah, it makes, you know, no decision is permanent, and we do, and we are afraid of making mistakes, and we're, you know, all the self-limiting beliefs about the perfectionism and things like that. Like all of that goes away when, you realize that this is just for this particular moment in time. And when I learn more and my life evolves, and I evolve very, very fast. I've had 9 careers. Like I have pivoted so many times. And so, you know, what's right for me now may not what is right for me in the future. And I give myself permission to make changes.
Yeah, I love that. And I wonder, you're mentioning bringing in the self-limiting beliefs. I'm wondering if this relates to self-limiting belief. And I'm wondering if you know, I know the book that you wrote has 91, so that's a lot. And I wonder if you could share sort of like the top 3 that you see most commonly in the women you work with or, you know, in society overall.
Right. So what I find most common is I'm not good enough. And, you know, people just feel very inadequate, unworthy. They self-doubt themselves. They lack confidence. And it can hold them back from pursuing their goals and dreams because they think their dreams are unattainable. And then there's the, and that's coupled with the fear of failure. I can't fail. And I have, so they live very small lives. They don't approach, mistakes as learning opportunities. They, you know, it's like, I'm not going to take any risks or try any new things. And, I'm just going to avoid big challenges and they miss so much opportunity for growth. And then the idea of, I must please everyone. This people pleasing, you know, and all of the foundational beliefs that we are given as children about what's true and not, all of that is tied to some their self-worth. And that then can mean that they overextend themselves. They don't say no when they need to, or they neglect their own needs and desires. And, you know, I've had a lot, I've worked with a couple women who have ended up near retirement and have said, I have never had the luxury of making a decision that just makes me happy. I've always had to consider what everybody else needed in my life. And now the kids are out of school, the in-laws or they're, you know, have made perhaps passed away. And now I have this, I'm in this situation that I've never been in before. And I don't know how to answer these questions. So, you know, I must please everyone, you know, is a huge one for women.
Yeah. I mean, all three of those resonate. I mean, and also are connected to things that I talk about as well, right? So not feeling good enough, not feeling worthy. My mind just blanked on the second one.
Oh, and I have to please everyone.
I have to please everyone was the third one. And then the second one you said was...
afraid of failure.
Good. Afraid of failure. Yes. So I had like a couple of thoughts. So related to the last one, you know, it was making me think about... So I spent a lot of time in my 20s agonizing about like trying to date people and finding the right partner and is taking so long and when am I going to find them and will I ever find, right? Like there was just a lot of like stuff in there.
Energy.
For me. Yes, energy. And I think what I missed and I see now, and it was highlighted when you were giving the example of a woman you worked with, is that there was such a gift in not getting married until I was 30. How old was I? 35.
Yeah.
36. Like, I don't know. 36. I got married at 36, I think. I'm 38. It was 2 years ago. Yeah, that's right. My brain is working slow today. But there was such a gift in that, right? Because I had this whole decade plus. And because I have a good amount of privilege and that my parents are very self-sufficient, right? Like they, you know, they have more money than me. They're doing very well. And I don't have like younger siblings or people that I'm like responsible for. And I didn't have kids yet. I have a child now, but I didn't, that I had this whole period of time where I don't think I always did it because I was struggling with the self-worth stuff, but where I could just make decisions about what I wanted to do, right? And like what I wanted to eat at night and where I wanted to go and how I wanted to spend my time on the weekends. And I see that, you know, it was such a gift to have that time to live alone without a partner, without kids, without, you know, being responsible for other people and to be able to construct my life and generally live my life in the way that I wanted. And I can see how the people who, you know, found a partner, got married, had kids at a younger age, or maybe had other family members who like depended on them, didn't get that luxury of just a lot of life when you're young, you know, just doing what you want to do. And I think that I wish that I knew that more. I wish I understood more when I was in that period, that how much of a gift it was, because I think I enjoyed it, but I could have enjoyed it more.
Right. I, you know, that is the life of a single woman without children, is that I have always been able to make decisions based on what I wanted. And I never, because I'm not in contact with my biological family, I was never forced to make mom happy or dad happier or any, you know, it really has been a free for all. Now with that comes almost a paralysis of options because you then have so many options. But if you have low self-esteem and low sense of self-worth, you are not going to take advantage of that gift and really go and explore. And my fear was always retirement, was always having enough money and being very fiscally responsible when I really didn't need to. And I could have enjoyed life, you know, much more than I did because I was always concerned about not having a safety net. But no, it is, I don't think either. I mean, one definitely allows more time for self exploration and self development. And I think you can possibly live without, you know, as many regrets. But then on the other hand, having that structure and having those responsibilities and stuff, you know, in a way you can almost go on autopilot and life becomes very easy because you're not really making choices. You're just fulfilling obligations. And so in a way it can be an easier life. Because you're not, well, if you are self-aware, then it's not easy, but you can kind of go on autopilot and just kind of, you know, show up and do what's required and not have to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that you said about sort of fear of failure or I can't fail. I mean, I think that's very real, right? Like, I think we've all been on the precipice of failure or experienced failure and it feels really bad. Right. And I think, you know, when we're in it, it's really hard to see beyond it. It feels like that's it. Life is over. This is over, you know, and then you get past and you're like, oh, it actually wasn't as big of a thing as I thought it was. But I think, you know, what comes to mind when failure is keeping people from trying or going for it is really that the biggest failure is not living full out and is not going for the chance, is not trying and being willing to fail. And I think, you know, that comes through when you hear about interviews with people who are on their deathbeds, right? And what they're saying is, I regret not trying. I regret not, you know, going for this or that or spending time with the people, right? I regret not living life full out in whatever way, right? Like it may not have been a big shiny life, but in whatever way that felt meaningful. And I think that we would all benefit from sort of seeing the actual big failure, the true failure, which is like looking back over your life and thinking, wow, I never got on the field.
Right, right.
Like I just didn't play.
Yeah. And you have to be resilient. You know, you have to be able to bounce back. And once you realize that that you can recover, you know, whatever ends up happening, you're going to recover and you're going to be fine. It makes the decisions easier because nothing is catastrophic. But if you're living in fear and you're making every decision you make is fear-based, those decisions, and you don't feel resilient, then it is like, oh no, the stakes are so high, I'm not willing to take the risk for an outcome that I don't believe is even possible. So I'm going to stay small and safe. But that is not fulfilling. It's not fun. It's not, you don't grow. You don't get to explore how magnificent you can really be. And so once I realized that I can do anything I want to do, I can achieve anything that I want to achieve. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not going to take me a ton of time. Like, don't make me a neurosurgeon in 2 years. I would probably need 40. But like, I am such a hard worker and that give me enough time and I can do anything made me realize that whatever life sends my way, I will always rise to the occasion and I will always survive and regroup and put my life back together again. But that took a long time, and it took a lot of mistakes that, and I just had to think back, you know, like, look at all the things that I have overcome. Look at all those, you know, those learning experiences. You know, what really can life throw at me that I'm not going to be able to deal with? So I may not know what's coming my way, but I'm confident that anything that comes my way is I'm going to be fine.
Well, it sounds like you've developed a lot of trust in yourself, a lot of self-trust, that over the years you've sort of been like, no, I can make it through. And
sometimes, you know, I have my moments, because there are times when I sit and am in much confusion. And when I quiet myself and I meditate, and my guides, you know, will say, just be patient. I'm just like, I don't want that answer. But you know, when I was living in New York before my marriage, you know, and I was like, okay, what is my next step? What is the next step for me as a human being? Because I am an overachiever, and I always need to be working on the next thing. Like, I just can't sit and enjoy. So it was always like, what's next? What's next? What's next? And my guys just kept telling me, you're going to be fine. And I was like, that's not good enough. I'm going to be fine. I know I'm going to be fine, but tell me more. And they were like, no, you don't need to know more. And I just had to, you know, so sometimes I really do trust my instincts. And sometimes I don't think I ask, you know, maybe the right questions, or I don't phrase things the right way. And I get these little, like, you know, just be patient, you'll be fine, sort of. And that's not satisfying to me.
Yeah, not so, knowing is hard.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the other thing that I talk about in my book a lot is you know, having faith without evidence. And that's it. You know, that's something that is really difficult. You know, I struggle with it sometimes. You know, I think it's difficult for everyone, is to just say, my move to LA was that way. I felt so confident in that move that was like an easy leap of faith, but other leaps of faith haven't been so easy.
And what helps you to practice that faith without evidence? Like, what are the things you do, the things you remind yourself of, the things you practice when you're in that space?
Yeah. So it's very uncomfortable. Very uncomfortable for me. And so I think I make the mistake of asking everyone around me. I do a survey of everyone around me, and, well, what do you think I should do? What would you think I should do? What do you think? Blah, 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 you know, and everyone has their different things, and none of it feels right, you know. I really have to just kind of, the best thing to do is reduce the stimuli that I have around me, simplify my life, wait for the dust to settle, and then I have clarity. I'm somebody that can't make intuitive decisions quickly. I need the dust to settle, and I need more information often before I'll move forward with any kind of confidence. But so I have to wait for the dust to settle. That's just me. You know, some people are much quicker at it.
Yeah. And it's helpful to know how you do it, what you need. And when you're saying, like, wait for the dust to settle, the image I got was like, and also don't kick up more dust. So I'm imagining somebody, like, you know, in the dust, kicking, you know,
right?
Like a dirt, dusty desert, like, the dust needs to settle, but I'm kicking it because I'm struggling and I'm resisting and I don't know what to do and it's never going to work. I'm all, you know, like, all this dust, right? And it's like, it's not going to settle.
It's not going to settle.
If you do that.
Yeah, you have to stay still, because if you start pacing, you're just bringing up the dust, right? And so, yes, that is very much, we do that to ourselves. It's like, you know, just stop and the dust will settle quickly. But I'm a worker bee, and so I like movement.
You know, for me, that's also why a practice of stillness, whether that's meditation or doing something that centers and grounds you, is so helpful. Because, you know, when things are going really well and everything's smooth sailing and everything's working out the way we want, we may not feel as much need to kind of have those practices, right? Because we're good. But then it's like, starts to get dusty, and then we start to resist, and we start to kick around, and we start to la la la, you know, and it's like, oh, we need it. We need that 5 minutes, 10 minutes of like at least trying, intending to be still. So there's going to be a little bit of dust settling so you can actually see, right? Because if you're creating a dust storm where you cannot see, you can't see a foot in front of you, you're not going to be able to figure out what the next best move is.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. So I'd love to know, what are some sort of practices that you've engaged in that you offer to your clients around shifting limiting beliefs, getting out of limiting beliefs that tend to keep us stuck?
Yeah. Well, the first one, and I think this is the most important one, is just pure self-awareness, is let's just sit down and have a conversation about what you believe to be true. And I go through them, you know, by category. Well, what do you believe to be true about your job and your career and how you earn money and what you define as success? And let's talk about children and family. And it's just like just a slew of categories that you can just go down and go, what do you believe to be true? And let's then see, does this work for you? Mm. It may not. And if it doesn't work for you, then let's change it. So yeah, I say you have to do some sort of inventory about what you believe to be true. And the critical ones are what I call the foundational rules, which are the rules that you are taught as a child. Anything under 8 is like a permanent imprint in your subconscious, you know, and so whatever you see and hear and experience becomes the truth. Whether it's true or not. So self-awareness is key. And then challenging the belief, like, you know, is this really true? And how does it limit me? I think the cognitive restructuring of just replacing those, the internal monologue that you have, or the negative, you know, limiting belief is like every time somebody goes to say, I can't do this. No, you automatically, you go, no, wait. And you change it. And that's where, you know, positive affirmations are very helpful, because it is, you can restructure your subconscious. You can change your limiting, but it's a lot of practice and repetition. Mm-hmm. And you can visualize things. You can visualize a great meeting coming to its conclusion, or you didn't think you could finish a race or a small little marathon or something, and you can use visualization to help you. The other thing is that when you are going through life, you can, if you're aware enough and conscious enough, you can see, oh gosh, you know, that was a limiting belief that I had before that I no longer have. You know, and so kind of keeping track on, you know, I used to believe this, but I now no longer do. And now this is like a core of who I am. But also just being like really compassionate with yourself. And, you know, and I do think, you know, meditation and being quiet and just being really mindful. And if you can, what I have been doing lately is when I get into a place of confusion and anxiety, is I try to imagine myself as the observer of my life. And I'll say, well, this is Jennifer panicking for no reason at all. Well, this is Jennifer, you know, trying to reach for perfection and is procrastinating instead and stuff. So this is Jennifer doing this. And so I find that to be really helpful. Because it kind of separates me from the little picture to the big picture.
You get some distance from it.
Yeah. So those are some of the, you know, and then there's, you know, coaches and therapists that you can work with, little things like keeping a list of like all of your accomplishments. So that way when you think I can't do something, or I'm dumb, or I'm a blah, 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 whatever it is, you know, you can go back and keep a list of all the things, you know, if you keep a list of all the things you're good at and all the things you've accomplished and all of the awards and all the promotions and blah, 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 you know, you start having evidence.
Yeah.
And the evidence is is not an anyone's opinion. It's like, no, this is clear. This is real. This is not somebody's, you know, it's hardcore. So that's what I find helpful.
Yeah, I love that. I, you know, the evidence I think is so important because our minds are not objective evidence collectors.
Right? No.
Our minds collect all of the negative evidence and tend to discard all of the positive evidence. And so then we have this data set, this picture that is biased, and we think all the failures, all the things that I have done wrong, and we forget all of the things that we have done right, all of the things that we have done well, all of the things that have worked out. And so writing down, I think having that sort of list of things that is going well is really important. I'm learning to do new things in my business that are hard for me, and it's not, you know, going as quickly as I would hope. And I was messaging with one of my friends, and she was like, she was just sort of like, here's the context, right? Like all the things that you've done, blah, 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 and it wasn't like everything, but I was like, oh, right. Like I am very narrowly focused on this specific time period. And I am not taking into account all of the other things, right? And all of the time that I have done things, whatever. And so I think writing it down and then also having people in your life, right? We talked about friendships, right? Having people who can be that honest mirror, not the critical mirror, but the honest mirror who can remind you of all of the things you've done and how wonderful you are, even if you are experiencing failure or challenge or whatever. So I love that. I also loved your recommendation of a self-assessment, because I think so often our beliefs are living in the background and they are unexamined.
Yes.
Right. And so they're these unexamined beliefs that we operate out of, and just even bringing them into the foreground and saying, let me look at this. I believe that I am a failure. Like if somebody else said that to you, would you believe it? Right. Is that really true? Is it working for you? Right. I love that question. Right. And so getting people to actually examine and look at, because just looking at it, and as you're saying, bringing it into your conscious awareness, then gives you the space to make a choice about whether or not you want to continue to believe it. When it's in the background, it's really hard to make a choice. But once it's out in front of you, you then get to choose. Now, the choosing and the practices of choosing can be challenging, but they work, right? And you have to do it again and again, but you still get to choose.
Right. Well, I have a great self-limiting belief that popped into my head, like in my 40s, that I didn't even realize was, I was told that I was dumb, brain damaged level dumb. I would never go to college. I would never succeed. I would always need help. And that the only time good things happened to me, or the only time I ever achieved anything, was dumb luck. And you know, I just hear my mom saying, Jennifer's so lucky, you know? And so when I was building my second business, and it required a lot of networking and self-promotion, I really resisted. And I said to myself, I'm waiting for something lucky to happen. I'm waiting for that chance meeting of somebody in a supermarket, or I'm going to ride the train and this business executive is going to be sitting next to me and it's going to be dumb luck. And I was like, ooh. So if you do not examine what's in your subconscious, that's how self-limiting beliefs affect your lives. Is I sat around waiting for something, a dumb luck, serendipitous sort of coincidence, and I wasn't doing the work because it was going to be dumb luck. And I was just patiently waiting inside my home, you know, rewriting my LinkedIn profile, you know, not doing the work. And it wasn't until I realized that I was like, oh, yes, yes, this is what an unexamined life does for you.
I love that you, I mean, I love that you're sharing that, right? Because I think so many people will relate. Maybe they didn't have a mom who said, you know, awfully, like, you're just lucky and it's just dumb luck. But I think relate to their being beliefs that hold us back. I, you know, similarly in my business, a thing that I'm having to lean into, which is very uncomfortable for me, is reaching out and doing business development, right? Like actually reaching out, promoting my services, asking for introductions, like all of that, like it makes me almost queasy. Like I really dislike
it. Right.
But I'm having to get good at it. And for me, my mom, and this, I don't think it wasn't intended to be harmful. It wasn't harmful necessarily, but she was like, you have to make sure that you are always invited. Right. So like, if I was going to go to a friend's house or something, like, it was, she was like, you must be invited. And I think some of that was her trying to protect me as a little Black girl in a predominantly white environment and never wanting me to be in a situation where I was at someone's house and their parents didn't want me there or people didn't want me there. And for me, it translated, and this lasted for a long time. It even sometimes is like, but they didn't invite me. Like, are you sure you're inviting me? And I would, like, in college and high school, like, I wouldn't, people would just be popping by each other's, you know, dorm rooms and stuff. And I wouldn't do that. And so I held back in part because I was like, I have to be specifically invited. And then now there's this piece in my business where it's like, but they're not invite, like, am I inviting myself? Like, what's it? Well, you know, it's right. Like this whole thing. And so whether the belief is more kind of benign or harmful, examining it and seeing it and being like, okay, this was the reason, whether it was, you know, somebody had narcissism and had all these issues that were projecting onto you, or somebody was trying to protect you in a particular situation, then you can examine it and say, okay, yes, in some ways, like, being invited is important. And in other ways, you got to create your own invitation.
Right. So sales bumps up, being a good salesperson, especially being a good cold caller, bumps up against a lot of foundational beliefs that were taught as a child. So it's like, do not interrupt, speak when spoken to, don't be a pest, don't bother people. You know, we have this thing about interrupting people. And so a lot of this, you know, when you listen to parents correct their children, imagine that child then becoming a salesperson and having to go out and self-promote. And don't brag. Nobody likes somebody who brags. Nobody wants somebody who just talks about themselves all the time, right?
And especially for women, right? Yes. Like, especially women are socialized.
You don't ask for raises. You know, women don't ask for raises. They don't ask for assignments. They think that if they are just really good in their jobs and they're the easy employee, that they'll somehow get rewarded. And that is not a game that anybody wins. And I have a lot of clients who really were the wallflowers and sat back and just felt like if they accepted all the terrible assignments that nobody wanted and they made their bosses' lives really easily and they didn't cause any trouble, that they would somehow be rewarded. And the fact is, no, you're not rewarded if you play that game.
Right. But I do think it's important to note that we come by it honestly, because in school, you are most certainly rewarded as a girl if you play nice and don't cause trouble and raise your hand and stay after to help with all the cleaning and doing this other stuff. Like, you are absolutely rewarded with the gold star and the A and the positive evaluation and the positive report. And so it's like, you spend a couple of decades being socialized into this way of being, that then when you need to succeed in a different way, you may or may not have the skills. You may have suppressed the skills or the natural abilities. And we also know that women are punished.
Yeah, yeah.
We also know that women are punished when we are like, you know, hey, I want to raise, or I don't think that's right. Like, we know that. And so it's such a complicated thing. And I think what you're saying is so right, which is like, okay, how do we acknowledge all these things and then still choose to do what we need to do or do what we want to do or, you know, whatever?
Yeah, taking a look at how we educate our young people and how it's very much, I'm going to tell you information and you're going to regurgitate it back for me. And then people go to college and it's the same sort of thing. And so that's why young people have really struggle in their early careers, is because they're just waiting for assignments. Just give me, tell me what to do, tell me what to do, tell me what to do, tell me what to do. And then at a certain point, your opinions, like what happened to me was, I was expected to have opinions. I was expected to have learned through all of this and all of a sudden be proactive and offer solutions and, right? And, but you have no experience doing that. So I work with a lot of people, helping people ace their performance review and helping people ask for a raise and getting it and helping them, you know, learning how they should be quantifying their contributions and really taking control of their career. And because you have to be careful about what assignments you select. Like what I tell people is, why are you in this job? What is it that you've got to learn? What is it that you've got to accomplish before you can move on to the next job? Because once you've ticked off all the boxes, you now need to move. And then, you know, so what is that next set of responsibilities and experiences and accomplishments that you need? And then you need to move once you've done that. Most people just show up at a job and just want to be told what to do because that's what, you know, like, I don't know who said it, Warren Buffett or Elon Musk or some incredibly successful person is like, we just teach people how to be employees. We don't teach people how to lead, whether it's as an entrepreneur or within a corporation and rise up through the ranks and be a leader, because that's a completely different skill. And we just know how to make a whole bunch of, you know, factory workers.
Yeah. And I think part of what you're talking about is people leading themselves.
Yeah.
Right? Like you're sort of countering the passive, I show up to a job, you give me work, I do a good job, and then I'll get promoted to like, I'm here to do this. These are the skills I bring. This is what I want to learn. These are experiences I want to have. These are who I want to be connected to. When I've gotten that, either if there's an opportunity to move up in this company, great. If not, peace, right? Like that there's sort of this leading yourself and taking ownership of your career and what you want it to be. And, you know, I think in so many ways, this sort of brings us full circle as we're wrapping up our conversation to where we started and where you started, which was I came out of college and I had no idea what I wanted, right? And so it's like leading yourself through your life and through your career requires a grounding in knowing who you are and knowing what you want and what you don't want. And that can be a process of self-discovery, but taking it intentionally to figure it out, to get curious about yourself, right, is part of what's required, right? And letting go of the limiting beliefs of other people will tell me what to do, or I can't fail, or I'm not worthy enough for my time and attention, and all of those things. Like you got to get rid of those things to be like, well, actually, let me focus, or it's selfish to focus on myself, right? Let me get curious about myself and what is it that I want? Not what do my parents want for me in my career? What does society say a good career or a worthy career is? But what do I actually like to do? What am I gifted in? What do I, right? Like these sorts of questions that then allow you to lead yourself to a life you want, a career you want, et cetera.
Yeah. Peace and joy. And you know, how do you define success? Well, it's different for everybody, but you should define it for yourself because that's the goal. You know, we have full control over our lives. We have full control over our thoughts. A lot of people don't want to accept responsibility for their thoughts, but we have full control over our thoughts. And mindset is really what determines your happiness in life. You can look at things a lot of different ways, so choose wisely.
That's a great note to end on. And I know that people are going to want to kind of learn more from you. They may be interested in getting your book. So will you tell people where they can find your book, how to connect with you further, all of that?
Sure. The best place for me is on LinkedIn. It's easy to find me, Jennifer Standish. I'm right there. And my book is on Amazon. And so, yeah, that's
awesome.
It's super easy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I so appreciate you coming and sharing your wisdom and insight with us today.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me this week on the Unconditionally Worthy podcast. Make sure to visit my website, dradiagooden.com, and subscribe to the show on iTunes so you'll never miss an episode. You can also follow me on social media at Dr. Adia Gooden. If you love the show, please leave a review on iTunes so we can continue to bring you amazing episodes. Lastly, if you found this episode helpful and know someone who might benefit from hearing it, please share it. Thanks for listening and see you next episode. This episode was produced by Chris and Tiana, and the music is by Wadaboy.